Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
And welcome to Signs of Life. This is The Gathering. Glad to have you with us tonight. As you know, this is a discussion show. We talk about all different things. Tonight's topic is going to be prayer and intention. Can we affect the present and the future with our minds? Can we connect to other minds? Can we connect to spirit? We welcome your feedback and your questions or your discussion. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. And our panel tonight are Tom and Melissa Gould, Bob Ginsberg, and Fran Ginsberg, and we're ready to go with some announcements.
Oh, is that where we're starting? Okay. Well, first I want to throw out there a big thank you to everybody who's been participating in the, you can partaste it too, in the Visa credit card, iGive.com, and Amazon.com ways of supporting this radio show without writing us a check. And if you haven't learned how to do that yet, I'm going to explain it to you really quickly. You could go to ForeverFamilyFoundation.org, and you could click on the Visa credit card and apply for the Visa credit card, and Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out. And then each time you use it, they make another donation to us. So that mounts up to a lot of money without you having to spend any more than you were going to charge on that card anyway. Then you can join iGive.com, name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice, and then shop in any of their over 900 online stores, most of them of which you're familiar with, like L.L. Bean and Sears and 1-800-Flowers, and again, a portion of what you purchase is then donated back to the foundation. And finally, while you're on our website, if you use the Amazon.com link to do your searches and to purchase your items and put them in your shopping cart, what you purchase at Amazon.com that you've chosen through those links will be a portion of that spending, again, will be donated back to us. So keep us going here by doing your shopping online accordingly, and we thank you in advance for that. If you are a business and you want to advertise on this show, you can contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org, or you could call the office at 631-425-7707. Our annual November conference is set for Phoenix, Arizona, at the beautiful Hilton Phoenix Airport Hotel, with free shuttle service to and from the airport, as well as to local attractions. And this conference will be the first of its kind as an intensive interactive weekend. Make your reservations now. The weekend will begin with our annual Friday night fundraiser on November 9th, featuring Long Island medium Teresa Caputo, and will continue through November 10th and 11th with a select group of scientists answering your deepest questions about the reality of the spirit world. The weekend also features certified mediums Dave Campbell and Deborah Martin joining our esteemed panel of presenters, Dr. Evan Alexander III, Lloyd Auerbach, Dr. Julie Beischel, Dr. Stafford Betty, and Dr. Claude Swanson. And then on 12-12-12, don't miss being in the right place on the most spiritual date of the year. 12-12-12 is a medium marathon featuring an evening of four extraordinary mediums: Bobby Allison, Kim Russo, Siri Bernstein, and Laura Lynn Jackson. Seats may be reserved via the website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org, going to the events page. We were surprised to see that these tickets are being gobbled up already, and this thing is quite a ways off. So if you are even thinking of attending, you might want to secure your seats earlier than you might anticipate is necessary. And again, Holidays Past this year will be in four locations: Natick, Massachusetts with medium Joanne Gerber, Pompton Lakes, New Jersey with medium Janet Nohavik, Bethel, Connecticut with Angelina Diana, and Melville, New York with star of Emmy-nominated TV show The Afterlife, medium Suzanne Northrup. Please visit the website for dates, all on Saturday nights in December, and to make your reservations. Okay, those are them.
Thank you for that. And as I mentioned, or I didn't mention, tonight's sponsor is LNR Productions. You can find them on the web at lnrproductions.com. We started the show by talking about what our topic was going to be, having to do with prayer and intention. And I don't know if we have any formal definitions, but they're kind of closely related. Is prayer intention? I mean, are they one and the same?
I think it is.
Sure.
Yeah, because you want something. And so you intention, you either send out the intention or you ask for it specifically.
Right. I think most people, when we talk about prayer, what pops into their head is, you know, prayer to a deity or to the universe or to their specific god in their religion. And I know a lot of people, you know, they say that they don't believe in the afterlife, and they don't believe in things like telepathy, and they don't believe in non-local consciousness. But yet, when something happens that's bad, the first thing they do is they pray.
Or if they might win lotto.
Yeah, right. You know, so that's a, you know, when we were talking about prayer, I think what we had in mind as one of the things to discuss is the power to heal, and there's certainly a lot of research that supports that, you know, that our minds being, you know, non-local can affect matter. You know, we can, as a group, we could focus our healing energy, which I guess is the same thing as a form of intention, and actually see measurable results. And it's not only in humans, it could be in bacteria. I know we usually close the show with a prayer for water crystals with, you know, Dr. Ramoto and things of that nature. So, you know, I guess, you know, with prayer, I mean, I can't say that I really ever subscribed to prayer in my own. I mean, I when I used to follow an informal religion, I used to, you know, say prayers, but they really mean anything to me. Some people incorporate a prayer in their daily life. I tend to think of it now as, when I think of prayer, I just think of going out to the universe. So I don't know how you guys think of it. But
that's how I feel about it, that it's going out to the universe. If something's weighing heavily on my mind, and I would never have probably actually called it praying. I typically would say I'm sending positive thoughts out right for somebody, because I don't want it misinterpreted as a religious act, but more that I'm imploring the universe, please help this person and turn things around. But I know, and I think, Fran, you've told me this too, that I think you have a special spot in your house where you put out your intention
right
to things,
yeah,
and I do that too. If something's weighing heavily on me, what I find helps the most is to light a candle, put an intention on it, and that way, anytime the thought comes back to me during the day, because I don't want to dwell on it and turn it into worry, because I've heard that worry is like praying for something you don't want to have happen. So I want to release it, and this helps, that you put an intention using a candle and let it out. And then if it comes back to your mind during the day, like, I hope everything's okay with so-and-so, it's like, I already took care of that. Don't even have to have that thought, because I took the action.
Right. And I think these sacred places that we create are just that. It's a place that's left just for the silent commune with the universe in trying to send positive intentions for good things to come. And so if you set up a sacred space, and let's say you're on vacation and you don't have access to your sacred place, since the mind is separate from the body, why can you not then send your body in your mind's eye to your sacred place and take care of what you have to take care of? So it's always good to have a sacred place, at least from my point of view.
Hmm. Well, when we when we're praying, we're setting our intention to the universe, you know, and maybe there's this this matrix out there that when we set that intention, it attracts things toward, you know, towards us. So if we can heal with our thoughts, we can also harm with our thoughts too, right? So
you would think, yeah.
Yeah, and the science seems to show that too. You know,
why do you think this world is the way it is?
Most people
have negative thoughts. Mm. They're not educated in the concept of positive thought and influencing stuff by intention. So when they get angry, they immediately respond with a retaliate negative thought, you know, wishing bad upon the person who did whatever, cut them off on the parkway or whatever. And so that snowballed. And then there's 10 people on the parkway doing that, and it's just more and more negative thought. So, of course, we're living in a crazy world. Everybody's engaged in negative thought 90% of the time.
And the real question is who's getting hurt by the negative thought. There's an old saying that anger is a poison that you drink and expect somebody else to get sick.
You've
got to be careful when you get angry. You're really...
That sounds like a good lyric for one of your songs.
Maybe sometime.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think we'll go to a break. We'll pick this up, and we'll talk more about intention and healing and prayer. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At L&R Productions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. L&R Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.lndrproductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. Tonight we're talking about prayer and intention. I'm not sure where we left off, but you know, I recall, and I'm sure you do too, that Claude Swanson wrote about an experiment where the experimenter, you know, had very good results, but he wanted to see if he can improve them. So they decided to integrate or incorporate a prayer for the greater good. And the way they would do that is that they said that they were going to donate money towards a good not-for-profit cause. And then when they did the measurements again and the results of the experiment, they found that the results were, you know, were better, you know, for what that's worth. And I know Claude also sends out a peace prayer, a global peace prayer, and the theory being that if a great many people set their intention for peace or for whatever goal they have at a specific time, and those times, there are times where first you have to coordinate it, because obviously there's all different time zones, and there are certain times due to geomagnetic forces and things that prayer is, and intention is more effective. Mm-hmm. So these groups try to get together and get everybody on the planet, and who knows, maybe we really can, you know, change something that way. But I guess one thing that we can discuss, if we're talking about intention, where our minds connect with other minds or with this matrix or with the universe, I guess we communicate with spirit, you know, the same way. So do you think that prayers help those in spirit? And do you think that those in spirit say prayers and set their intention for us?
I like to think so.
I would think so.
I've heard that our thoughts and our love for those who have passed on help them elevate. I think probably given your beliefs, if you subscribe to that anyway, that our spirits are out there and working towards things, that the fact that they loved people here on Earth that love them back, that love will help move them on. And the thoughts that we still have for them now, we haven't forgotten them. Our love continues, so they continue to elevate because of that love.
And if they want to help us, we always think of praying for them, but maybe they're praying for us.
Maybe that's when we get these moments of inspiration or guidance. Maybe that's what that is.
Yeah.
You're driving down a road, and all of a sudden you say, I don't know, something tells me I shouldn't take this route.
Yeah.
And then maybe that's what that is.
Yeah, very possibly. I don't know. Just yesterday, actually, something came up that made me think about the definition of prayer. And on Facebook, my daughter-in-law posted a little sign that said, "For the well-being of my husband and all those around him, I pray that his football team does well this season." and I responded, asking the invisible for the impossible. I guess that's what prayer is all about.
Must be talking about the Jets.
Well, could be talking about the Giants.
Yeah, we have a little rivalry here. Although I do root for the Jets, but Tom's a bigger Jets fan. I'm a bigger Giants fan. You know, so when we talk about we believe that intention draws things towards us, and as we talked before, our negative thoughts also draw things towards us as well. So, do we have does one work better than the other? I mean, do we have to have a positive intention? Do we have a better chance of attracting what we're asking for if it's a positive thought than a negative thought, or maybe it's the reverse?
It also depends on whose thoughts they are. So if it's a rather negative person, they pretty much only take note of the negative things. So it'd be hard to go, but look at those good things that just happened for you, and they didn't even notice them.
Right, and
they self-focused.
Turn it back into but and back to the negative again.
And it's the thought process is extremely important. Just started a new book, and they were talking about something that I believe Claude Swanson wrote in his book too, about the gentleman who sort of developed the whole polygraphic science, and that they got the idea to see, you know, if you could put a polygraph on a plant, and they hooked up, wired a plant, and the guy thought, well, let's see, if I rip off the, or take a match and burn the leaves, I wonder if I'll get a reaction. And before he even took the matches off, the needle went nuts on the thing, and right. he didn't say it. He just thought, I'm going to burn this plant's leaves, and the plant started getting nervous.
Right. And that's, Cleve Baxter is the guy that did it.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did another amazing experiment, which has always stuck with me, is that the theory being a plant is a living thing, we're living things, and obviously live shrimp were living things. And in his laboratory, at one end of the laboratory, he boiled a pot of water, and he had a bunch of live shrimp. And in the other end of the laboratory, he had this plant that was wired up, because he's the guy that invented the lie detector. You know,
yeah.
He had hooked up, and he measured. And at the same moment that he put the live shrimp into the boiling water, the plant in the other end of the lab that was completely hidden reacted tremendously. You know, there's an empathy among all living things. Really, it's very profound, you know. Ever since I read that in Claude's first book, I've been talking to my plants. I have one plant. Fran and I got this plant when we got married 30 years ago. How many years? I don't know.
How to do the math.
And we still have it. It's a house plant, you know, and I keep talking to it, and the more I talk to it, the better it does. I pet it, too. But I won't admit that to anybody else. But, that is, some of those experiments really have applications that we could all learn from, you know, when we think that we're these isolated, unconnected beings. Not only are we connected to everyone else, but we're connected to all living things and nature in general, you know. So.
But then it begs the question of, when you have people out there that intentionally do harm to other people and other living things, how come they're not attached to this? How come they're not affected by this? Is there something wrong with their wiring?
I always feel that punishment when they get to the other side.
Well, I agree with that, but I'm saying if the plants are so sophisticated and so aware, I think it's more that we are no longer aware of our connection to the greater good. We've become so embedded in our material surroundings that we're convinced that that's all that matters. And that's removed us from what the plant hasn't been removed from, which is this association to everything living.
Mm-hmm. You know, we really, nobody knows, this mechanism that allows these things, these psi occurrences. So when we're trying to, and we could do our own experiment, you know, where I'm trying to send a thought to you, Melissa, you know, and depending on the resonance between us, or maybe it has something to do with emotion, we may be able to convey a thought to each other, and maybe not. And maybe it's the same thing with spirit. People always say, well, how come I don't connect with spirit? You know, or how come I went to a medium and the connection wasn't made? And maybe it's the same type of, I don't want to call it a mechanism, but the same phenomenon that is taking place, is that for reasons we don't know, there is some sort of, who knows whether it has to do with frequency or entanglement or senses that we're not aware of. You know, I mean, I don't want to call it a sixth sense, because I've been reading stuff lately where that's a misnomer. There may be hundreds of senses of which that we are capable of, we're just not aware of it. You know, so but that's.
I still think it's how far we are removed from our original creative or the original way we were created to be all united as one consciousness. And some of us are more embedded in the material world than others. So sometimes you'll hear a medium or an empath or somebody say that they're very sensitive when somebody walks into the room that has an issue or has a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm saying it's the opposite. It's not that they're very sensitive to it. It's that the sensitivity hasn't been removed, whereas in everybody else, the sensitivity has been removed by these outer forces that we're turning our attention to rather than keeping our attention on the goal.
And I still think it goes back to us expecting it to be a wow, really wow moment, and it's so much more subtle.
Yeah.
And the thought is there, but you don't even, it's so subtle. It's just the thought, and you don't pay attention to it because you're expecting the connection to be, you know, electrifying, but it's perhaps not.
Mm. I was just reading, I finished a book on where they were discussing these psychic surgeons, you know, psychic surgery, if you've heard about it, you know, like that John of God and, you know, others. And Guy Lyon Playfair wrote a book about the psi phenomena in Brazil, and he went into detail on some of these psychic surgeons. And, you know, pretty fascinating stuff. I mean, it's the kind of, you know, even for us who are pretty open to this, really it's something I think we all have to see to believe, so to speak. You know,
is it the hands-on where they... I heard something about this one in 1975 at a talk I was at, and a gentleman, I felt like he went, or he saw a video of it. And I thought that makes sense, because if our bodies are just composed of cells, you don't need a knife to cut into it to open it. You just have the ability to work those cells until they open and spread open, and then they can reach in and just pull out the cancer.
Oh, Melissa just made that so simple.
Yeah, you know,
isn't that great?
And actually, you're pretty close to what their explanation was. You know, they said that they're able to do this because the, you know, spirit is able to separate the platelets from the blood, you know, and heal that way. But in some of these cases, some of them, like you described, Melissa, where they wouldn't touch, you know, they just held their hands over, but some, they would use rusty knives and slice people open. And in a lot of cases in Brazil, some of these surgeons were open and let traditional, you know, surgeons in Brazil observe, you know, so they could learn. And, you know, and they were just amazed, because what would happen is they'd slice people open, they'd stick their hands and manipulate these things. There would be some blood, and then they would just run their fingers over and it would heal. And in 5 minutes, you could barely notice any type of a scar, you know, which would eventually disappear. So that, you know, and that, the way our way of thinking, how is that possible? But the thing that struck me, and the reason I boil it up, is that one of the surgeons would say, you know what? The healing, people would line up sometimes, you know, like hundreds or thousands of people to, you know, to get these things done. And they would say, you know, they think that the healing is done once they get up to my table, but the healing is done way before. They just set the intention, you know, and the healing begins from spirit, and we just kind of finish it up, you know, over here. So who knows? I mean, it may change medicine, you know, drastically.
What about the healing that happens in these churches, you know, where they put their hands and the person falls backwards? And
yeah, that to me is,
I don't know, that's televangelist.
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, anything I see on TV, I discount right away. Because
are they pushing them, or is it the force of the cure that knocks them?
Supposedly,
or is it a whole drama thing?
They build them to a frenzy and then they pass out.
That's a good explanation.
But the an interesting thing, again, back to this book that I'm reading, they talked about this using hypnosis, and where this gentleman who studied hypnosis hypnotized a person, and his daughter was in the room, and as the hypnotic suggestion is, for the next 30 minutes, your daughter is going to be invisible to you. And then when he came, brought him out, and they let him open his eyes. Sure enough, the daughter was standing right in front of him. He couldn't see her. But it gets better, because the hypnotist then reaches into his pocket and pulls out a pocket watch that he had, and goes up to the daughter and puts his hand in the small of her back with the watch. And then he asked the guy sitting there, you know, what do you see in my hand? And he says, I see a watch. And he goes, can you read the inscription? And the guy comes in like this. The daughter's standing right in front of him. And he reads the inscription. So it's part of this book is to show that, you know, what we think is real and what we think is solid, you know, maybe isn't so. And that it's just as Fran was saying before, we are so trained and so... we're so solipsistic as humans that think that we rule the universe and that we know everything that there is to know, that if we see it, that's the truth. But truth is a subjective thing.
Well, would that fall into what you were telling me? I think that you also read in this book that this existence right now is really just a lucid dream.
Well, that was in the foreword of the book that they're talking about that perhaps if you're talking about reality, what we're experiencing on a day-to-day level is the same thing that you experience when you're having a dream and you realize you're in a dream and it looks so real. And then you wake up, but you're still in a dream and it looks really real and time moves in a way and, you can't get away from it and that sort of thing. But there is more to the universe than just walking around on this planet.
And we've heard that before, I think, in Testimony of Light, that Spirit reported the other side is more real than real. So maybe it really is.
Well, we're hearing it over and over again in many books, in many of the older books and accounts of any kind of non-physical or spiritual connection. It just keeps coming up over and over again.
Yeah, one of the channel reports, as you just mentioned, where the people say things like, it's really hard for me to remember what I did and what went on in the physical because that was just a dream, now I'm in the real world, so it's, and maybe we'll have that same perspective when
that all seems to tie in when Fran and I heard someone mention the Akashic Records the other day.
Oh, right.
So if the Akashic Records are the real thing, so what we're doing right now is living out some of the things that are recorded, but not all of them.
Well, if
apparently
past, present, and future is all happening at the same time, maybe we are. But
I mean, it's a hard concept for us to wrap our physical brains around, but the reality is, if you remove time and space, everything does have to happen at the same time.
Yeah.
So there has to be a different configuration of how the soul of who we are exists in order to, quote-unquote, make sense of everything happening at the same time.
And that's the key word there, that we need it to make sense. You've read it, and I've read the Seth material, and he often says, I'll try to explain it so that you can understand, but if I really explain it, you couldn't possibly understand.
Right, and that's what's so cool about this. I really believe that the Seth records were the real deal.
Mm-hmm. And you, back to what you were saying, Melissa, the we've heard that very often from near-death experiencers when they're asked to describe their experiences, many of them say those same words. It was realer than real, which also goes to show the difference between that and hallucinations, they can't put them into words again, they go back into this, dream experience, but they had true reality they describe on the other side.
Right, and you can watch these near-death experiencers when they are attempting to explain it to you, because they all have that same look on their face, that they're no longer here with you. They're trying so hard to explain it. Their mind is back there where it is, saying, okay, how do I put this into physical words for these people to understand?
Well, along that line, interestingly, to throw out a plug there for a major television network, but the show Survivor is got a new season coming up, and they're bringing back this guy, I believe he was a lawyer, named Russell Swan, who passed out on the show and had a near-death experience. I mean, in the show, when the camera went in on his eyes, they were just glassed over, and the host was, he was white as a sheet because he thought that we, okay,
we killed somebody on
Survivor.
What ratings?
Well, now they're bringing him back. He wants to have it added again.
Right.
And ought to be interesting just to, because I'm sure they'll sit around the campfire or whatever, and he'll talk about what happened to him.
Yeah, I remember you bringing that up way back when.
Bringing a near-death experiencer back.
That makes the assumption that then they're going to have to at least acknowledge that people have near-death experiences, which is a great thing.
Exactly, yeah.
We're going to go to our break. When we come back, maybe we can explore a little bit and discuss whether or not certain people are better at intention and healing and prayer than others, and whether you can practice it and get better at it. So stay with us. When we come back, we'll talk more about prayer and intention.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At LNRProductions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. L&R Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.LNRProductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world, but for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential, and research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. The number here is 1-888-627-6008.
We're talking about prayer, intention, and healing, and, of course, the afterlife. And before the break, I was talking about whether or not certain people are better through training or what have you at healing and intention. I was looking at some of the research. There was one prayer study where it was done at Harvard, and the experimenter had everybody, and he was just taking people off the street, basically, you know, and had wanted to participate, and he had everybody recite the same standard, you know, prayer. And then other researchers, like Elizabeth Targ, did a study, but she would only accept into her study a person who had, didn't have, you know, I don't know whether it was had years of experience of prayer and study or didn't have, but the point is that that different research studies will have different results depending on the capabilities of the people involved. So I guess the question is, does it take practice? You know, can we enhance? Now, I know you and Fran recently went to a healing session.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's an example of people going to, some are going just because they're curious, but others are going to try to hone their skills. What was your take on that for the people that were there?
There definitely were people honing their skills.
Yeah, and I think that was part of that circle. That circle is meant for people to give and receive Reiki. As to practice it,
and I
you
guess
know, to have an active practice every mm-hmm. couple of days or every couple of weeks, so that you know you're actively doing it. So they invite anybody who wants to go into this session, and anybody who would like healing can be healed, and the practitioners get to practice and hone their skills. Obviously, you can't just go become a Reiki master and then just sit home and knit. You're going to have to do something with it, or it's going to just, I guess, dissipate, and it's a healing process.
All these books that I read, you know, they always have suggestions about what you can do and different exercises. So, I mean, people definitely do think that it's, since we all have this ability, we can bring it out by focusing on different things and using different techniques. I would imagine that it's true.
Maybe I can share this with you then, Bob,
because
it's interesting. When Fran just mentioned something a little while ago about different roads and you just, you know, or choose the road that maybe you're inspired to take, I picked up a book the other day that it has a message for every day of the year. And I started on, I think, September 3rd, so I read the message for September 3rd, and it was exactly what had been on my mind at that moment. So I waited till day two to read the next one, and again, it was, I think that one maybe did talk about just what you said about choosing roads, that we have this path from start to finish that we come here with a blueprint, but we're free to take all these other roads, like on a map. When you see a road map, there are major highways and lots of little roads, and you can still get to the same place by taking one of the little roads. And you might have a lot of little offshoots of that, or you might take the bigger road and get there, you know, more expediently, but you haven't learned anything new. Mm-hmm. So today I was curious what the message was going to be, and this one was dated December 6th.
September.
I'm sorry. September
6th. She just removed time and space.
You can see it says September 6th on here, but it says just 5 minutes. And it says, is it all right if I read it?
Sure.
I hope it doesn't take me 5 minutes. Are you dissatisfied with your life? What would you do to change it? Anything you say. What if we were to tell you that the change you desire would come about with the simple investment of 5 minutes out of each day? Would you be willing to invest 5 minutes to change your life? If so, then join us daily and sit quietly. 5 minutes, that is all we ask. 5 minutes on a regular basis of closing your eyes so as to close out the outer world and then focusing on your inner world. Yes, of course your mind will want to chatter. Tell it you will be back in a few, but please be quiet for now. Concentrate on your slow breathing as a way of quieting your thoughts. This is the beginning. If you use these 5 minutes as a training ground to attune to all that is, having the intention when you sit of getting to know yourself as the God force, then true change will begin. Yes, it's a bold statement, we know, but how else will you transform your life? Are you dissatisfied with your life? Begin to change it with 5 minutes a day. Every day, change will occur. It is the law of cause and effect. And if those 5 minutes become 10, then 15, then 20, then we cannot be responsible for your transformation. For at that point, you will truly begin to understand who you are, and you will finally take full responsibility for your life. So I thought that was so interesting that that's what today's message was, given today's topic on the radio.
Uh-huh. So what have you learned from that?
Well, I didn't sit for 5 minutes. I'm so blown away, like, whoa, this is so cool. I have to go print this and bring it to me. But I think it's true. I do think it's true.
Well, the book that I just finished before I started the one I was talking about was in basically a how-to to be a healer.
Yeah.
And they start off saying things like, you know, if you get up and go across the room to turn on the light.
Right.
Can you, or if you eat a sandwich and you digest it, do you know how you did that? And yet you do it. You do it every day. You do hundreds of things every day that you have no idea how if he calls the pea brain, who's controlling our bodies, had to actually figure out how to do this stuff, we'd probably all starve. And the point being is that they've talked about this, that you only use 10% of your brain, and there's a 90% of your consciousness that does everything for you. So in healing, they say it starts with you have to have an intention. You want, you want the, or your patient has a bad knee or something, and you say, let's help that person get better. And then if you sit there and go, well, how am I going to do that? The next step is to distract your mind so that it doesn't get in the way. It's like, get the heck out of the way, and then that's when the healing's going to take place.
You could go turn on the lights with your digestive family.
They actually talked about, in a session, if you're with a patient, that they get into an argument, start talking politics or something that will just completely distract you from that, I'm supposed to be healing, and the last thing you want to do is concentrate or focus on trying to heal the person. They have another exercise where you get your mind to just spin, so you're not thinking of anything. Mm-hmm. And, the person who wrote the book, oddly enough, was not a spiritualist or a meditator or anything like that, but basically I find that meditation does what he was trying to do, is shutting off of the mind.
Yeah. Isn't it strange also how we a lot of people think of when they say consciousness, they think of the mind, and when we say mind, they think of the brain, but consciousness, we don't know that has anything to do with the brain, really. So when we set our attention and we receive information, we could be doing all that with our gut, or with our heart, from a biological sense, that I was reading that our gut area, especially like in the intestines, has more nerve endings and sensory devices than the brain does, So, but we never think that consciousness could be associated with other parts of our body, which is probably a mistake, we feel and receive, I suspect we feel and receive information, with our entire bodies, but certain locations like the heart and the gut. Well, how many people say I had a gut feeling?
Exactly.
So, but those same people, how did you come up with that? Well, I had a gut feeling. Really? Do you believe in the afterlife? No. Do you believe in telepathy? No. It's all a crock. Do you believe in remote viewing? No.
How do you get? Oh, that was it was just a gut feeling.
Yeah.
So you know, they don't think about that, but really, it doesn't make sense. You know, those same people that will just say that it's impossible rely on it. And those are also the same people that start praying when something bad happens, right?
Right. And the author of this book, who didn't go there. I mean, when he started talking about the 90% of the brain, and you know, you're doing this, and then letting that part of your the brain do the healing, and you know, I was waiting for him to say, you know, you tap into the energy flow of the universe and let the energy take over. Which is the way I feel about it, but like you say, it's a lot of people, and even the ones who say gut feeling, they're saying the same thing. They just don't understand it.
Right.
So I just want to clarify, because this is an interesting train of thought here. So what you're saying, Tom, is when people say prayer, they generally are talking about what they've learned in their churches or temples or they've memorized words.
Mm-hmm.
And in memorizing and repeating these words, they think it's the words that are affecting the change, where actually the repetition of the words removes their mind from the physicality of the world and allows the consciousness to take over and send out this positive
Exactly. Yeah.
So we need to re-educate people in the world that praying for something isn't literally that.
Right.
You know, because people say, well, I don't need to chant what they taught me in church. I can just pray, ask for whatever I want. I can ask to win the lotto.
Yeah.
And that's not what prayer is. Prayer and intention is just setting the intention out there and letting it go. And even that's oversimplifying it. It's really allowing the consciousness to take it where it has to go.
And what we've discussed many times, if you look at all the major religions and you strip away the dogma and the ritual, it's very similar. I mean, you'll have a nun who will have the rosary beads and do the prayer, as you say, over and over, and then you'd have a Hindi doing a mantra. Exactly the same thing. And with the hopefully the same results. I mean, it's all part of and part of prayer, or which is what we're talking about tonight, intention. It's getting the intent.
Yeah. And, I was thinking about that, and also I used to, when I started reading all these books, and people would say, I'd read statements like, you must, you know, pray to your loved ones in spirit because it helps them. You know, and then I would say, damn, they said, I had guilt because I wasn't praying to my loved ones in spirit. I wouldn't think to do that. But when I reflect on it now, I have love in my heart and I have intention, you know, and so I don't need to pray. I mean, if love and intention gets transmitted, that's my prayer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't have to have a verbal, you know, communication, although...
Right, and I think
maybe that's just a reinforcement.
What Tom is pointing out is that the ancient mantras, which is now what they give people who are learning how to meditate, here's a mantra to remove your preoccupation with a prayer and to give your chattering mind something to focus on while your consciousness does what it's supposed to do. So this word prayer has totally messed up everything here.
And that has been man's downfall all along, is that they got too wrapped up in the ritual and lose sight of the goal.
Well, I think it's time to wrap up, and we enjoyed our conversation tonight. And I know, Fran, you have a closing healing prayer.
Maybe we should start calling it something else. But anyway, we ask our listeners to join us in our healing energy circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Stanley Mullen, Julie B., Chase McKenna, Elizabeth McKenna, Glenna Irwin, Barbara Petillo, David Hayes, Rita Springer, CJ, Eileen LaFada, Mark Varon, Wendy Lippo, Vicki Steffi, Nancy Scheel, Barbara Russell, Diane Archangel, and Paul Smith. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all the creatures in our Earth's waters, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And that was taken from the original Gulf Water Prayer by Masaru Emoto back on May 9th, 2010. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.